At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Man, 2020, what a damn shit show. Thanks to the amazing folk at Bella Catering who have survived the COVID-19 outbreak in Australia as we are starting to wake back up, for sponsoring and bringing us this week's show. If you guys want to cater and you're in Oz, bellacatering.com.au. Catering doesn't mean planning a huge event. It might just mean that for the first time in many months, you've been able to have a stack of your friends and family over, and who the hell wants to cook? You're probably doom scrolling through your Twitter, shitting bricks that now North Korea is firing off shit at South Korea. Go to bellacatering.com.au. Get off Twitter just for a split second. Thank you for listening. bellacatering.com.au. Now, all the President's Minutes.
In like 1993, I'm not sure what year it was, but I was in LA. I had smoked a joint, and I was watching the movie Apocalypse Now. It was like just after 4 o'clock in the morning, and what later would become the known the Northridge earthquake happened. It felt like it started in my apartment. You know, I'm from east of the Mississippi. On this side, we don't know what earthquakes are about. I gotta tell you something, man. Excuse me for burping. This shit was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. A lot of things went through my mind. I was like, not naked, but you know what I mean? Just chilling in my boxes. I put my clothes on. I found my weed and a pipe and a lighter and some money and my keys, all these things. And while the earthquake is happening, while I'm experiencing what an earthquake is the first time, and I was certain that I might very possibly die. And matter of fact, I remember I made a point not to scream just in case I lived, I wouldn't have to remember myself being vocally terrified, but I forgave myself for being terrified. That earthquake couldn't have been more than 35 seconds. This man kneeled on a man's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Can you imagine that? This kid thought he was gonna die. He knew he was gonna die. He called for his mother. He called for his dead mother. I've only seen that once before in my life. My father, on his deathbed, called for his grandmother. When I watched that tape, I understood this man knew he was gonna die. People watched it. People filmed it. And for some reason that I still don't understand, all these fucking police had their hands in their pockets. Who are you talking to?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to All the President's Minutes. I'm your host, Blake Howard. Joining me today is a film and culture critic for Culture Map in Houston, Houston Chronicle, amongst other publications. Also a podcast host of the podcast, Everything is Cancelled. But I've sampled his wares and his forthright opinion largely on his extremely entertaining and insightful Twitter, at Uncle Crizzle. Ladies and gentlemen, Craig Lindsay. Uncle Crizzle, welcome to All the President's Minutes.
Oh, it's an honor. It's basically, I've made it into the big league when I'm doing a Blake Howard podcast. I guess I finally made it. I'm up here with, you know, Bilga and John Burns and Manola Dargis and you know, Cam Towns, all these people, and just like all these, you know, character actors and filmmakers and whatnot who've done your shows. So I'm just like, I'm just glad to finally have somebody invite me on their damn podcast. So rare to say.
Well, I'm thrilled that you could come on the podcast, and don't say that. It's a big family here of folk, and I feel like the most out of place person in all of those names that you just rattled off. It sometimes scares the shit out of me too that they've ever been on a show with me.
It's crazy trying to get people on a podcast. I have a podcast. I live here in Houston, and I try to invite people I know in the city of Houston to be on my podcast, and it's just like, oh no, I can't do it. I got a car thing or whatever. It's just like, I gotta go literally outside city limits like you have to get people. Cause that's been like one of the positives of social media, just like getting people outside of, you know, your area, your region,
yeah,
to, you know, connect and talk to different people. Because it's like, if I just stuck to the same people I know, I'd be ass out.
Yeah, I'll tell a funny like inside podcast story, which is that there's a very, very well-known Australian critic who has a great show in this country,
mm-hmm.
who I asked mm-hmm. to come on the show, actually a couple of them, who like live in Sydney. Pre-COVID, yeah. Live here. And I'm like, I'll come anywhere. I don't mind popping to your house. I'll bring all the gear. You just give me your time, or I'll come to your office, or I'll come to your studio, whatever you want. I'll bring some gear. We're good. And I can't get those guys ever. They're just like so miraculously so busy. And then like Manola comes on like three times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how does... In my mind, the greatest living film critic have time to come on my show three times, and she lives in freaking L.A., and you guys in Sydney can't come on. It's a bit of a funny one. It's a bit of a funny one. But, you know.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy because just like, it's not even like people on the statue, like motherfuckers got like, like, I don't know, like I'm like they're somewhere knitting. They got to, like, hey, can I keep you on my podcast? No, I'm just like, I'm gold. To that part of town. I don't know if you hear that shit. We're just like people just saying, like, oh, that's North Side. That's too far. I just can't do that. Just, by the way, I forgot to ask you. I mean, I listen to the podcast, but can we curse?
Yeah, of course we can.
Okay, yeah. So these motherfuckers, they just don't, you know, they have whatever reason. And just like people I've known for years. It's got to the point now, of course, with COVID and the pandemic and anything, like, we don't even have to meet. We could do the stuff we're doing now, or call yeah, up, or call whatever, up. And still, it's always a problem. So it's always easy getting people you would not suspect from another part of the world, and they say, "Okay, I'll do it." And I'm like, "All right, well, I guess okay, you want to do it? I guess it's fine." So.
I'm always pleasantly surprised. I genuinely. The incredible array of people that I've gotten to speak to and be connected with, and like especially COVID has accelerated it, and for some folk it's made it easier because they've had to learn how to like communicate with the Skypes and the Zooms and digitally, like, and for me it's been my bread and butter through all my podcasts. So I love that for this, like I love that connection, and you know, and then I get to talk to you. That's fun.
And also there's this new thing, I don't know how it is over in Australia. But over here in America, it's like the whole big thing now during the pandemic is communicating people through Zoom.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to discuss, but like we're talking through Skype.
Yes.
And it's like the MySpace Facebook battle all over again, where it's just people just like, I actually, on my podcast, I asked a person, like, do you want to communicate through Skype? And she just said, I haven't been on Skype in 10 years. I said, excuse the fuck out of me. All right, I'm sorry. I guess we'll try to do something else then. We won't do Skype because apparently Skype is out of touch or whatever. It's not cool. It's not she-she enough.
I'm like, we can do Skype, we can do Zoom, we can do FaceTime, we can do a phone call. I don't give a shit. As long as there's a way for us to communicate, then and we're happy, especially if I know the guests. I just like to be able to see people's faces because I feel like when we're meeting for the first time and you're interacting over something, you kind of can get a bit more of a sense of the energy of the conversation. But once you've done that and you know the person, it's like, man, I'll call you on your mum's house phone. I don't care. Like, as long as the audio, as long as I can plug you in and the audio sounds great for folks listening, that's completely great.
Uh-huh.
So it is a tumultuous time, and this movie, All the President's Men, and this podcast, All the President's Minutes, has been going through this Redford and Pakula 76 masterpiece. I've been looking at it, began looking at it largely as like the energy of the time in 1976 when it was made, and, you know, earlier in 74, which is based, was feeling like it was echoing, you know, our time, all of the kind of weird political fuckery. And I was, you know, I think that what started in this show was yearning for, like, man, I wish that journalism could speak truth to power and hold people accountable. And even more so in the last few months, it's now, especially triggered by the death of George Floyd, the insane upheaval, rightly so, of peaceful protests and then violence and all that sort of stuff. It just, so many people are like, well, now we're living in our own little version of 1968 to 1980 American, you know, social, political, and civil rights discourse again. We're having to, like, relive a moment because clearly it hasn't stuck.
By the way, not to interrupt, but, like, according to Ben Shapiro, we will be going to back to that time, which is crazy, because I'm thinking, like, oh, the 70s, where there's, like, all this classic black movies and black music and great new movies like All the President's Men and Casual Sex. Let's go.
I hate to say it, but I love that Ben Shapiro tweet. Because so many of the responses in my timeline, like all of our probably mutual follows, were just lighting him up with, like, movies, music, free love. Let's go, baby. Let's do this thing. Like, I'm in.
Yeah.
I just feel like that new Hollywood moment is sort of being relived now. What's your relationship to this movie? Have you, you know, is it something that you revisit? Is it something that you remember fondly? Or is it something that kind of you're new to?
Well, the movie came out in April of 76, right?
Yes.
Well, I was born in July of 76. I'm a bicentennial baby, a.k.a. I'm old. And, that whole year, that was just like a bomb-ass year for movies.
Yeah.
You know, my great movies, like, you know, just movies like Rocky, Taxi Driver, All President, Assault on Precinct 13, which is one of my favorites. And, you know, funny, because I saw it before I saw it in my high school journalism class, which is funny to me, because it's just like I was already well-established with the movie before we got the, you know, preliminary, you know, because, of course, like, All the President's Men is one of those movies you just watch in journalism class.
It's like the basic curriculum. If you don't watch All the President's Men in a journalism class to start off with, that you're not in a journalism class, basically.
Yeah, it's all we saw All the President's Men and Broadcast News.
Yeah,
with you and stuff like that. I saw it already, and like I enjoyed it. Regardless of where to see it in journalism class, I just love it. It's a well-made movie made that was released during the same year I was born, and it's just one of those movies that I've come to just love and admire from that decade. But also because, like back in, I think, in the aughts and stuff, like it was released part of a box set of, like, Warner Bros. Released a box set of movies about the media. It was just like, it was back, it was network, and it was a dog day afternoon. And when I actually got a job at a newspaper where I was a film critic for several years at the Raleigh News and Observer, I actually reviewed that box set and just talk about those movies and just how much I enjoyed and grew up watching those movies. And I was always like a big fan of movies from that era, the 70s and whatnot. And just looking back on it recently when you gave me the call that I was going to be on this podcast, and just looking back on it, it's just one of those, I've listened to other episodes that you've done and just talked about how it's such a signature movie in terms of getting the feel of a newspaper.
Yeah.
Of a newsroom, like that fluorescent lighting, and just the hustle bustle and whatnot. Because that was kind of the same thing that I was ready to get into before I got the job at the paper. I mean, I applied for two jobs at two papers, one in Fort Worth and one in Raleigh, and I didn't get the Fort Worth one. But they flew me out to Raleigh. They flew me out to Fort Worth, and just getting that feeling, that newsroom feeling.
Yes.
Just everything going all the way, the same way it is in movies like All the President's Men. It's like, yes, I want to be a part of that. Yes. I want to be a part of all that.
I guess I hadn't really put it together so much now, but it's like, if you've ever worked like you have in a hustle bustle newsroom and there's that energy, it's like you must also be able to work with the chaos of Twitter flickering on your phone or on your desktop, even in your isolation, because that constant stream of distraction and still being able to work, that is a talent you probably acquired. There's a talent you probably acquired while being in a newsroom, while there's a hustle bustle, while no one's shutting up, while people are on the phone constantly while you're doing that. You would have been on the cusp of like sort of the very old school paper media and that evolution into digital, right?
Well, that's the crazy thing, because when I was working at a daily, it's one of those things where it's just like, I don't know how it is over in your neck of the woods, but we have daily papers here, we have weekly papers here, yeah. And I found that I get more freedom and you just find different ways to flex your creativity, and also working with people who like always trying to find different ways that I do the same thing in a daily.
Yes.
Rather than a weekly. Like there are people in daily, like just working it daily, I always feel just like I could always like do a lot more. But when in a dance, working, I've worked in the mid to late aughts.
Yes.
In a daily, and this was right when Twitter was just starting. Yes. Matter of fact, actually, I forget what it is, but just like I just found out last night that I've been on Twitter for 12 years.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. That's how long Twitter's been around. But it just, So just like I was one of those people that just was just discovering Twitter.
Yes.
Like I had friends just beginning to get on Twitter, so it wasn't like this major thing. People forget Twitter wasn't a big thing when it was around. It was like a cult thing.
Yeah,
and I
remember in university we're in a class, and it was a social media class, and they kind of did a straw poll of like where people were at, and at that time I wasn't on any social media,
And I remember there was this like one girl, and like it was like, who's on MySpace? And it was like a whole bunch of what you'd expect, like just like girls and a couple of like good looking dudes, like they're all on MySpace. It's just basically a glorified hookup zone. There's a few older people and a mix of older and younger. A couple of people have gotten on Facebook, and then there was just this one lone girl on Twitter, and she's like, "Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's great." And like, well, like she was talking about it and describing it. And I remember at that time, like going, "Oh, Twitter sounds all right because she says you can interact with like the real people. Like you can talk to a filmmaker, you can talk to an actor, like you can follow people that you like and publications." But I remember when she was like listening to the rest of the conversation, I was like watching her, and she was like sneering at everyone, like, "Ugh, I can't believe you're on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm a trailblazer. I'm in the cult already." But you know, I kind of think she was right.
Well, I mean, that's how it was back in the day, because like there was, like I mentioned earlier, like the MySpace Facebook war, where like MySpace was just like MySpace was around first, but it was just like this thing, but and then Facebook came along and kind of just blew everything out of the water, and just like it got to the point where people were just dropping out of MySpace and getting on Facebook. And then Twitter got on there, you know, with the 140 characters, and I was just like everybody else, like, what the hell am I going to say on Facebook? I remember one of the first times I went on Facebook and I just said, "Hey, I'm drinking some liqueur on a Saturday. I don't know what the fuck you want me to say. Like, I don't know if anybody's paying attention." It was like, it was just like this sense of just like, do anybody truly care about what I have to say? And I still feel that way now. Just like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm not getting any major likes or retweets. So why am I still on this shit? Just to look on like who's dead and who's got canceled. You know, that's the only reason why you're on Twitter these days. And I just remembered like being on in the early stages of that. Being one of the few people on Twitter, and then telling people at my job, at my daily newspaper, like what, you know, just what this is, and there, and it was like the same response, like, what the hell is that? And, and they didn't exactly know, because like newspapers, especially daily newspapers around that time, were trying to figure out how to just get the whole online thing going. I mean, we had blogs and we trying to figure out how to weave that shit online, trying to do the whole thing where it's like we get the online audience to go online and, you know, have them pay for the papers and say, you know, print is just dead all over the place. And just, it's always been a struggle. And it's also always, it was always a struggle for just people trying to figure out just the online aspect of things. I remember I would see people in the newsroom looking at old ass viral videos and whatnot. They'd be talking about it, and I felt like, I don't know if you've ever seen Despicable Me, where that scene where Gru tells like his henchmen, like, "Why do you have to be so old?" It's just like just like old people generally just always late to shit and just in their old ways, and now I'm officially part of that. And just, but like I always enjoyed working for it daily, because it's just like, it just, you know, you can always, they're all people, especially working with great people, and you know, there's been this thing, I don't know if you heard over there, where it's just like people, and there's that whole Bon Appetit thing where the guy who ran Bon Appetit was I don't know, just like bigoted and racist and fuck, not listening to people of color. And working with dailies and working with certain people I knew as editors, and like, you could tell they knew how to talk to black people, it's just minorities, and that was always, and I was like, oh, I can fuck with you because you just want stories and ideas, and just always that I was always great working in daily environment, daily newspaper environment, dealing with those people.
Well, we're now at the
59th minute of this movie, and we've got, as Daily News, an editorial conversation as it gets.
I was a little afraid, like, because we've been talking so much, like, I guess we should talk about the movie.
I think it's one of the questions I usually ask when we start the show, as folks know, is, like, their experience. And I find it fascinating, an experience that you've had that a couple of guests have had so far, including my best friend Maria Lewis, who's a journo, is you guys seem to go into the newsroom right at the same time. And, you know, she's a she's a woman of color as well, so it's, like, the... really fascinating to just hear what it's like when people are trying to figure out and wrangle with what we deal with now every day. Like, news does not exist in papers so rarely. Like, even in Australia, we still have quite a large paper industry. Like, newspapers are pretty popular and whatnot, but it's just like, it's everything's online. So I love to hear stories like that about what your experiences is still in a daily, like the concept of still a daily, the concept of a newsroom that's wrangling with it. And I love when you're like, you can also see the writing on the wall of, like, people don't understand what's coming. That's a really nice thread, because that's the great comparison of this movie, is like, it's so authentic and it's so on point. And it's just so funny to, like, compare and contrast, like, trying to imagine what these guys would be like at this precipice between, you know, between print and between, you know, online and even now later. But.
Well, you know, it's like when I was growing up, when I was going to college, I mean, we had this. Because I wanted to be, you know, I was want to be a journalist, and that was kind of like the thing in the mid '90s. And Houston was originally a two paper town.
Yes,
there was the Houston Chronicle and there was the Houston Post. And then just one day in 1995, the Houston Post shut down.
Whoa!
And that was the end of the whole two paper existence. And even then, I realized at that point, like, there is going to be a sea change. Like, there's just, like, this is like the writing on the wall. In my opinion, just like, just people won't need papers as much as they, you know, they're supposed to. Because it's just like, as like if a city as big as Houston can't survive with just two papers, then, you know, just the future is going to be a lot less, you know, you're going to need print journalism a lot less. And I just realized this even in the mid-90s.
Yes.
And just like, even then, I was still like, well, I guess, you know, I'll keep on doing this shit until hopefully something better comes along. And it's just like, it hasn't. but it's still like a thing, like being a journalist, or, you know, just in my position, something you want to do, because, like, writing is one of the few things I'm good at. So it's just like, try to make a living out of that as much as I can.
You got to make. Well, here's what a conversation is like in the paper right now about their livelihood. Speaking of a two paper town going to one, and the Post thinking that and feeling like it's not going to exist. Craig and I are going to watch the 59th minute of Alan J. Pakula's 1976 masterpiece together. You guys are going to listen along, and then we're going to come back and talk about it.
Well, that almost no other papers are reprinting our stuff.
Open.
Look, there are over 2,000 reporters in this town. Are there five on Watergate? Where did the Washington Post suddenly get the monopoly on wisdom? Why would the Republicans do it? McGovern is self-destructing, just like Humphrey, Muskie, the bunch of them. I don't believe the story. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, where's now? Woodward. Bradley, you'll see us now. Answer the phone.
Are you trying to find the lowest possible common denominator? Is that your plan in the convention?
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So where you want to start? Where you talk about where Balsam and Robards are talking to the, I think, the city editor, played by guest John McMartin.
Yes. Well, okay. I always start with one line or one thing that just leaps out at me. I love Bradley's feet on the table, and I love that his shoes are worn. There's just one little detail I love that he's like, he is at least a former shoe leather journalist. And I also love every extra that's working in this movie in the dynamic newsrooms. And I just love, there's one line you can hear really pronounced in this minute. It's one guy or one gal going, so are you going for the lowest common denominator? Is that what you're going for? Yeah. And I just wonder if it's like a copy editor, like giving a journalist shit about like, is that what you're going for with this piece? The lowest common denominator? Yeah. But no, this minute is a wonderful one because exactly as we started to say, it is the fear that you're chasing a story that doesn't end, that no one else is on, and contrary to kind of that romanticized vision of journalists being, you know, constantly being a person who's getting an exclusive or constantly trailblazing or things like that, it's putting them out on a limb. It's risk. There's safety in, you know, a huge political event. You know it's going to be covered. It's newsworthy. People want to know about it. But chasing down these leads when they don't really know what the story is yet is starting to cause some of their editors, you know, John McMartin as one of them and Martin Balsam, it's starting to cause them a little bit of concern and hesitation.
Well, it's always just, I think like at that point in the movie, yeah, there are just, because of course, like you got, you know, Martin Balsam and Jack Warden's characters who are just helping along. Woodward and Bursey, or they're now officially known at this point, Woodstein,
yep.
Yeah, it just, you know, they, like, these kids, these hungry kids, they want to be a part of it, and Bradley Robards, of course, on the fence, and you have some like John McMartin. And by the way, I don't know, I haven't listened to all the episodes of this podcast, but have y'all just talked about just the amount of, just the list of guest stars
of this incredible cast. No, it's come around in bits and pieces, but I think we've been stuck in the newsroom for some time now. Like, there's some great stuff, but like now, almost like from the leap off point as we pass the hour mark, that's when you get I think the true breadth of this incredible cast. You get the Jane Alexanders and you get the Penny Fullers and you get Robert Walden as Segretti. Like, you get all those folk late. Like, it's all coming later as the movie goes. But like it's an absolutely ridiculously stacked cast who've all had these huge careers. And they only get like 3 minutes in this movie to do anything, and then they leave and they get out of there.
Well, I just love that when I first saw it at the end, it was in the credits. They just put guest stars. I like those, because this is a small little thing. But like when I was a kid, when I would watch movies, because I grew up in the 80s, I would get obsessed with these movies that would have like, you know, special appearances by, and have like a list special cameo appearances by, like. Like National Lampoon's Vacation and fucking the Muppet movies and everything. It's just like these special cameos. I actually, like, I think one time in 1988, I typed up a list of all these movies that I had on VHS, which had special cameo appearances and special guest stars. And I always found it funny that something like All the President's Men have a list of guest stars, and that's just my thing. But
but it is good because it's just like what you're unintentionally realizing is that was in someone's contract. Someone's agent said that for them to be in this movie for X amount of bucks in the credits that needs to say special guest. Like that was what they hung there. You know, that's the battle lines that were drawn. If you want me for a day,
really?
you know, that's the root cause BS of a lot of that, like special appearance by and where they appear in credits. It's such an old school Hollywood thing. And in this movie, the funniest one is that Robert Redford was allowed to go first in the credits on the poster, but Dustin Hoffman had to go first on the credits in the movie.
Yeah. It's like the whole Tom Cruise The Firm thing.
Yeah.
Where it's just like Tom Cruise and Gene Hackman get top billing in the movie, but you don't see Gene Hackman's name in the poster for The Firm and shit like that. So
they're the ones where I'm just like, some agent or someone made an industry out of that seemingly like nothing thing. Like,
yeah.
And only obsessives are hanging around for the credits, like maybe you or I, who are like, special appearance by. Like, why is that a special appearance? It's a movie. Yeah. It's not a TV. Like, on a TV show, it makes sense, right? Special appearance by, special guest. And the most egregious one was like, what was it? Heather Locklear in Melrose Place, who was like
special guest star.
Special guest star. Like, she was there for like 8 seasons.
she was a special guest star. It's like Jonathan Harrison, Lost in Space. But it's just, even in this movie, because, like, I remember I was watching the opening credits, and there'd be, like, special appearance by Martin Balsam.
Mm.
And I'm like, this motherfucker's in half the movie. What is a special appearance?
it's a longer appearance, but it's nonetheless special.
Another thing I was obsessed about, like, when I was growing up, watching posters and ads and papers, just, like, there would be the actor in... And their name would be in a box.
Really?
Yeah.
Would it be like you know, would they be the and?
Wouldn't be and. They would be like in like the like they'd get top billing or like they would be in the
So it's underscoring the credits. It'd be underscoring the top billing so much that their name's in a box.
Yeah. I would always see that shit. It'd just be like. Like in like on like a poster or whatever, or an ad for a movie, a newspaper, and just be like fucking like Robert Shaw in a box, like that means something. And hey. It's always like, why is Robert Shaw's name encased in a box in the credits? So
he's anointed.
Yeah, exactly. Quint, whoever else.
When you're Quint from Jaws, your name is forever. Captured in a box from then on.
Just go back and like look at old posters and just see like somebody's name just be like Charles Nelson Reilly in a box or whatever.
Robert Shaw makes sense. Yeah. Charles Nelson Reilly is a stretch. So we're here in this newsroom. There's concern over this. What do you love about this minute? Because I mean, John McMartin, like, literally is the foreign editor in this whole sequence and gets to be this, I don't know, like, fortune teller, essentially, of, like, I don't believe it. You know, he's playing devil's advocate. I don't believe it. Why would they do it? We've seen this government implode. It's like, he's like the cynicism incarnate in this scene. And that's kind of his whole
role.
We don't get to really see him do much else. But I do love that in this moment, you see Bradley ask him to stick around because he wants to hear it. Like, he wants to hear from these guys, like, are we going down the garden path with this?
Yeah, well, I think that's the point. Like I mentioned earlier, like, you know, Ben Bradley's on the fence, and, like, Balsam and Warden, they kind of, like, support again. And then you have somebody like John McMartin, who is just, like, you know, that's another voice in there to and, like, just the speculation. This really a thing? Is this like really happened? Nobody's really talking about it much. Like, what are you guys even talking about? And I think that like adds emphasis on it wasn't just a communal thing where it's like, yeah, let's all get Nixon. Let's all get figure out what this is all about. Just like there is some trepidation and blowback. And I just think that is just like just the idea of the storytelling, just to show how just. There were people that thought like what are we doing? Is this a real story to go through? And is this as we go into the next scene where it's just like Woodward and Bernstein are walking to to Bradley's office. So, and also, that I love that scene because it's the first, I feel it's like it's the first instance at that point in the movie where Woodward and Bernstein are literally a unified front. They are walking, like, they're walking in unison, like, almost marching to the, you know, to the head of the throne.
You're 100% right. I think the last time that you see them is in, you know, begins in the 30th minute with the that you see them together in unison in that wonderful Library of Congress shot. But when they're stepping into the Library of Congress and out of the Library of Congress, they're at a great distance between each other. Like they're not in sync.
Yeah, Bernstein said first up the steps, and then like they're going out, and just like they're not really on the same level. But then we get to this moment, and they are really they're just officially intertwined. They're just like in in step with each other. So.
It's a good cross sectional minute because you've got this cynicism and speculation. As you said, I love how you said it's trepidation because it is. It's like the fact that there are five reporters in town that are working on this in 2000, you do have to put a question mark, but you do have to, because like that's the other thing is like, I suppose now when we look at now what journalists would be contending with is, you know, scandals at the level of Watergate seem to happen every 5 minutes, you know, in both my political realm and yours particularly. And it's like chasing down people or dedicating people to chase it down. You know, these conversations, I imagine, must be, like, incredibly tough for editors. Like, we don't have the time to give that person the time to chase it down because, you know, to be honest, like, it's the inverse. It's not like, hey, we might find this, like, malfeasance, which, you know, does have some weird tendrils up to the presidency. It's like, oh, no, we've got some really bad crap that's going on, like some really, really awful shit. We know that it's happening, but don't worry, there's going to be another one tomorrow. You know, there's going to be another one next week.
And you just mentioned, like, it's got to the point now where reporters be doing shit, reporting something that is very scandalous, that it does seem like a scandal, but is it enough of a scandal? We've gotten to that point in, I don't even want to call it culture, just like, where it's just like, is this enough of a major scandal to report about?
Yes.
Because, I don't know how it is. Once again, don't know how it is in Australia, but here we have a president who's just like ass deep in scandals. And just like, I literally know people who are trying to get his DNA so they can finally sue him for, harassment charges and whatnot, and you would think people would talk of, the newspapers and the news channels would talk about that shit all the time, but there are so many other things to talk about. So many other things.
Man.
To talk. And that's just one of many things.
It's an insane period because, I think I joked around facetiously that like during the election time, we've just seen, they're talking about the scenes and even John McMartin mentions it in this scene. He's like, oh, the McGovern thing, they imploded. Talking about an incumbent or a Democratic candidate, that it's imploding, they can't get themselves together, they can't get their shit together, they're not going to beat Nixon, why would Nixon go out on a limb and do this? And it made me reflect on the whole, like, grabbing by the pussy moment. It's like, it feels like...
remember that? Remember when we all fought, oh, it's over.
That's exactly what I mean. It's like, McGovern has a vice president candidate who once had shock therapy. And that is the end of that career. Like, the entire Donald Trump election run was shock therapy for the international community and particularly the American community, because it was like There was some scandal after scandal, lie after lie, exaggeration after exaggeration. It was reported factually across a whole stream of papers, whether they sit a little to the left or right in the center or to the right. And it's like, you know, it's like, I don't know what to tell you. We've given you scandal after scandal after scandal. And you know, the ones that stick, I mean, look, you know, this might sound controversial, but, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that Hillary Clinton was the right candidate either. I was, as an outsider, I was like a Bernie guy. And then there was a whole bunch of weird stuff that happened with the Democratic election thing, which is that Bernie was actually selected as the candidate, but then they just sort of put Hillary in over the top. So that was kind of weird as well. But it just, when I think about this sequence, I'm like, things that used to cause political runs to implode now are just like, we're just like brushing them off like a fly. You're just like, see ya.
Yeah.
See you later.
I think, and also it just depends on just how strong the other side wants it. Because it's just like, the Republican base are just basically drawn up of a bunch of people who are so afraid to lose stranglehold of power that they will just go. They just go no matter what. You know, people like this is like Trump has given them many reasons why he is not a suitable president, just a suitable human being. But they're still, standing behind him because they just don't want, they just want that control. And it just goes back to all what all this is about, what all the president's meant. Because, I mean, wasn't the whole thing that the reason Nixon resigned because the fucking Republicans told him to resign because he couldn't, because like they didn't want this blemish.
Yes.
You know, just the blemish, the party and everything. It's like, you got to go. So it's just like what the hell happened? Why wasn't more Republicans more responsible during that time than they are now?
I think you may have just nailed it, which is there's power. It's, you know, you know, when the shifting, you know, and this is the fascinating thing, you see like surveys and you see what, like the next generation, like younger than you and I, like the next generation coming through, extremely progressive, very open with rights, like civil rights are like their top priority, you know, environmental issues and concerns and fairness and justice. And when you poll those people, they all like, it's just blue, like, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-olds all across the world. It's just blue. Like, it's just this litany of, you know, democracy and more socialist thoughts, not whether it's not socialism, but it's like socialized medicine, for example. You don't have to be a socialist to have socialized medicine. You know, we in Australia have socialized medicine essentially, but it's like, you know, we're a deeply capitalist country. And it's just this fascinating thing where I think you may have nailed it. It's like the stranglehold, like at that time, the Republicans knew that they would still probably be able to maintain a presidency and have a stranglehold on conservative values if they just had a better candidate than Nixon at that time or someone who could come in and be fresh. Whereas like they might be at their last legs, you know, like you've got to think of how old is that base? How aware are that base? And they're trying to weaponize them more, you know, digitally and do all that sort of stuff. But, you know, things are moving, things are progressing, and I think that it's going to get harder and harder to swing that pendulum back the other way as time goes on.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about it because, like, listen, it's a goddamn nightmare here. Like, I'm pretty sure you've seen just like with the pandemic and the protests. Well,
The protests and the pandemic in your state having 4,000 new cases like a couple of days ago.
And
the protests that are still going every single day in some parts of the country.
Well, just you think that with all this stuff happening that leaders would be more just attuned to just do the right thing. Because I was just reading about stuff going on in Australia, because of course you have the issue, you know, gun control and everything. Like, you guys are like the gun control champions of the world, And even when with the pandemic, like the right wing, I forget who's running the whole continent.
Yeah, he's essentially right wing prime minister. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's just like that person, he, you know, put his foot down and just, you know, realized, hey, people are dying. Let's shut this shit down. Let's lock it down. Let's contact trace. So at least so now you just like they have 102 people dying apart from the like hundred thousands of people dying in America. And just like even when you guys were, you know, dealing with the whole gun control thing, you had a conservative leader handling that and realized that just like, okay, there's these mass shootouts or whatever. Let's clamp down on gun control. So it's just like even if you don't agree or disagree with certain politics, they will when time comes to it, they will do the right thing for the country, but we don't have that. It's like motherfucker, just like everybody's grandma dying, and we still don't figure out how to deal with COVID. But it doesn't matter because motherfuckers are still going outside with no masks on. Because of course you can't tell them to put masks on because that's hindering on their constitutional rights, which I'm sure they've never read. And it's just insane over here, man. And just like what the fuck? Why are y'all conservatives better than our? I know, like we can also talk about the whole stuff with the racial aspect, which I would love to get into. But just like, in terms of just like making sure nobody dies a lot, why are your right wing conservatives better than ours?
I don't know. Like the answer is I don't know, because like at face value, our Prime Minister Scott Morrison, like I would never have elected him in a million years. In my mind, he's a complete dope. However, I think one of the things that he may have realized is his limitation. Also, our election was really close, our last one, and the candidate that he was running against was fucking awful for our Democratic party was basically essentially equivalent, which is our Labor Party. I mean, they can't get their shit together, number one. They can't get a candidate that works, that's smart, that's articulate, that represents what the party stands for. They got a lot of work to do, number one. But yeah. I think our conservative leader at this time, this is the thing I actually deeply appreciated about his leadership at this time, which is like they deferred a lot of their expertise to our chief medical officer in the country. It was a relief. Like most press conferences would go up, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, and basically would spend 30 seconds or, you know, a couple of minutes outlining what their rationale was with this and why they were doing this, and then they would hand it over to our chief medical officer to basically articulate and explain all of the reasons that underpinned the decisions. And all of the premiers, which are essentially like governors, equivalent of all of our mm-hmm. states, all sat in a room with the prime minister and the chief medical officer and like, this is what we're doing, this is when we're doing it, this is how we're doing it. And basically just did like, they did that. They made it happen. And a couple of other massive things that helped for our country was like, we've got socialized medicine. So, you know, when tests need to happen, it's free and all that sort of stuff.
God damn it.
But that major thing was, and this is what I can, like, I'll shout out, I'll give him actual respect, is like he deferred the expertise to the experts and didn't have an ego about it, just said, we need to fix this, we will do everything. And they literally have pulled out all stops. And you know, now when some of the Black Lives Matter movement has reached Australia and it's talking more exclusively about like Australian Indigenous rights, and there's been a lot of people, you know, a lot of outcry because a lot of the same, you know, police brutality challenges have happened in Australia when it comes to Indigenous people. When he starts to talk about that, that's when he goes back into his conservative mode. No, that's not what we're like. We don't do things like that. No, our country's not like that. And you're like, bitch, fucking read a history book. Yeah. Read the stats. Yeah. Like the stats are blinding. Yeah. Like use the same approach that you used with COVID. Ask legitimate experts. And if we've done something wrong, just go, yes, this is bad. And we're going to implement XYZ. And once we do that, that's, you know, like, it is what it is. You know, it's awful. And I just don't understand why he's not taking the same approach. It's just baffling things.
Yeah. I read about that too. Just like how it's like everybody's not dead. Let's get back to, you know, saying stupid shit about people of color. And yeah, it's you was talking about the whole thing about listening to medical experts. I don't know what the fuck that is with us.
I don't understand.
Where that. We don't want to listen to the people with degrees and just who actually know about medical stuff. Because for some reason, like I mentioned earlier, just like people talk about, hey, wear masks. Did I ask you to wear like gloves and everything? Just wear a goddamn mask. And people are like, oh, we're not supposed to, you know, have a CO2 up again. And just like, I feel like clothes off. And then now all these videos of white women losing their shit at Walmart because these people at Walmart just wear a goddamn mask so you won't infect everybody. And they can't even do that.
It baffles me because in Oz, it was a bit like that. There's been some trepidation with folks wearing masks and stuff like that. Obviously, our outbreak wasn't as bad. But in the peak time, it's like, just go out with a mask. And, you know, the thing that, you know, as like a citizen online is like, I look around Australia and like right now, the instances of infection and things like that, people rarely wearing masks now. It's like when you go into a shopping center, I definitely want to wear a mask. But if I'm out for a walk with my family, I'm good. You know, if I'm going to the beach, we're not wearing masks. But again, we're in a country where I think in New South Wales, I think we've had like less than 10 cases in my state, less than 10 cases in maybe the last 10 days. You know, we're averaging like one or two a day. And this is even with, you know, huge protests for Black Lives Matter and other things and things being more open and you're allowed to have more friends and family over at your house because we had a lot of restrictions and things like that. But yeah, it's crazy because then like you know, with the Black Lives Matter protests and everything happening, it's like you sort of forget about the pandemic still thriving. And then you look at the stats and it's like, actually in Texas where they've had the least restrictions, it's like, it's now out of control. And it's like, at what point is someone going to go, this is actually genuinely out of control?
Well, that's the thing. Everything is out of control. So it's not even like a thing worth mentioning. Yeah, shit is out of control. Just like the cops are still killed. I don't know if you heard this, lynching is back. So it's just like, people barely being lynched now. So, hey, like, yeah, shit is officially out of control. We don't need to actually say it out loud. Shit is out of control.
It's fucking unbelievable.
Sorry to bring it down like that, but
no,
it is
no.
true.
Look, like, this is... It's so, you know, when I started this show, it was like, it's almost like a perpetual lesson. You watch this movie and you're like, how do these guys speak truth to power? You know, perseverance, you know, they had editorial backing, they had people pushing, they, you know, people didn't want to hear about this story, but they made it emphatic and they worked their ass off and they just kept working to get things to where it is. And one of the challenges is that when you watch this movie now with everything that's going on, like, and I spoke to the great Matt Zoller-Zeitz on an episode that's upcoming with the show. And Matt was just like this movie feels like a fantasy. It doesn't feel like reality. Like not the reality that we're living in. And so it's really fucking hard to reconcile because you're just like the worst of the 70s that propelled it out of it. And Nixon's departure, you know, was cathartic, you know, in many ways for people, but it didn't maintain progress.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't maintain progress. Progress was actually squashed, and then it's you know still coming around, still being engaged with, still happening.
It's because it's funny you say like the movie is kind of like fantasy. It's fantasy in terms of just like seeing journalists, serve as kind of like the heroes.
Yes.
And it's always funny because they came out because, of course, a few years ago, Steven Spielberg came out with the post, and that was kind of, it's kind of saying, like, we have to go back to the past in order to just show how much journalism can get shit done.
Yes.
And this is the reason why people were still seeing journalism teachers were still showing all the president's men
and broadcasting
in the '90s.
Yeah.
And broadcasting in the '90s when I went to high school. So people could, yeah, so it could serve as a reminder, like, hey, you know, if you want to be a journalist, you have to like realize, you know, try to still believe that you can track down things or expose things that that still matter and mean something.
Yes,
because you know just. Because you know, we at a time where just like it's just like people are doing whatever, certain people in power just doing whatever the hell they want, and we still need people to hold them accountable. If that makes any sense, if that still matters,
if people being accountable still matters,
yeah.
Oh man. I hate to end this on a bummer, but I think that was a really poignant way to maybe go out.
Craig. Really? I'm sorry. Well, you know, no. Here's what we can do. I'm sorry if I may add.
No, go.
If I may add something. Because the thing that I wanted to talk to for some reason the most about the scene is that, you know, when we cut to Dustin Hoffman in the newsroom, we look at his desk, and there's the goddamn bike wheel. And you just realize that whole shit. Wait a minute, does this mean Carl Bernstein is a cyclist? And of course, if you Google Carl Bernstein bike, you find this whole goddamn history of him being a cyclist. I love that they added that little moment in there. So it's just as a reminder, like, oh shit, Carl Bernstein used to ride, because he used to ride a bike. All you know, all around DC, lived, I think, at Capitol Hill, and he would ride to work in a bike. And there's actually a part in him, All the President's Men, where he talks about, I believe, his Raleigh getting stolen, like his Raleigh bikes, crazy enough. I used to live in Raleigh and work in Raleigh, and then he also brings up, he finds out that Jeff Magruder. Who they, you know, of course, one of yes. the people, you know, they look at. He was a cyclist too, and it freaked him out.
That is such a great touch. It is literally at the 41st second of this minute. If anyone's interested, that bike wheel. I've never, in any of my research, picked that up about Carl Bernstein. That is so great. I just thought it was, again, the thing that I always noticed with Carl at that desk is the three coffee cups at varying yeah. levels of being finished, and that his desk is particularly a shit fight, even more than all of the people that is around him. I've never noticed that, but that is such a funny touch. It's like, no, we need that touch in there. Bernstein's a famous cyclist. That's so funny. That is a great pickup.
And it's also another thing I read about, because like he was pulled over, I think for running a red light on his bike.
Yes.
And like the cops were like ready, like if you got a ticket, that would be a 2-point assessment against your license, and you get a fine. And he went to court and he fought that shit, and he won that. And of course, he went on to topple the Nixon administration. So, hey, it all worked out.
Just so you know, everyone out there who's a cyclist, maybe you can topple a U.S. administration if you run a red light on your bike and you fight it and win.
You don't have to work for Grubhub and Postmates all the time. You can actually do some...
Oh, shit.
You need to make a change. Just...
Craig Lindsay, mate, thank you so much for doing this show. Thank you so much for being a part of All the President's Minutes. It's great talking to you. I think it was a rollicking roller coaster of a conversation, but I loved it, and I loved hearing about your time in the paper. I loved hearing you wrangle the chaos, and I especially love I love your platform for these poor Deliveroo and Grubhub drivers to have a future. So thank you so much for being a part of the show.
And you also have I love hearing you because you have a very soothing voice. But then, like, yeah, of course. Australians have very soothing voice. I don't know. Your voice reminds me, for some reason, of Margot Robbie's brother. I don't know why. but just like all y'all have soothing Australian voices, so it was very nice talking to you.
You're welcome. So where can we find, do you want to give a shout out to where folks can find your podcast and all of your other stuff really quickly?
Well, yeah, every other Friday I do a podcast called Everything Is Canceled.
Great title.
And yes, you can hear it on like all, you know, Apple Podcasts. But just, if you want to go to the source, it's anchor.fm/UncleCrizzle, UncleCrizzle. And also, if you want to hit me up on the Twitter, the Instagrams, the Facebooks, I'm on TikTok. I don't do any TikTok shit, but I'm on it, so I'm watching all you. I'm on Byte. I'm on, like, just type in Uncle Crizzle. Just put that in the search engine, and you will be introduced to my whole world.
And what a world. Thanks so much for being a part of the show, yes. My friend. You're the best.
Thank you for having me, sir.
That was the incredible Uncle Crizzle himself, Craig D. Lindsay. If you want to find him, the best place I genuinely recommend is at Uncle Crizzle, which is CRIZZLE, at Uncle Crizzle on Twitter. That is the best place you can find him. Man, he was so much fun. That will lead you off into all of his different projects, and we have links in the description for his podcast and his Twitter. Oh, Craig, that was a blast and a roller coaster. We went to the deep darkness of despair, and then we went all the way to Grubhub and Deliveroo. What a treat. Guys, thank you so much for listening to all the President's Minutes. We have a monster week coming for you this week. Lots of episodes, 4 big ones, in fact, and some great ones in the coming weeks. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. If you can, jump into our description. There's a place to donate some cash in there if you want to support us, or if you have the means to support us. We totally get if you cannot right now. It is an incredibly tough time, so a share, a recommendation to a friend, reach out to us, mail@oneheatminute.com, at ATPMpod on Twitter, or at @OneBlakeMinute is where you can find us. We'll catch you on another episode soon. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.